In our third case, 2023-1155, NRA National Prescription Opiate Litigation, Trumbull County, Ohio, Lake County, Ohio, Plaintiffs Executive Committee versus Purdue Pharma, Walgreens Boots Alliance, Inc., Walgreens Company, Walgreens Eastern Company, CVS Pharmacy, Ohio CVS Stores, CVS Tennessee Distribution, and CVS Indiana, CVS RX Services, and Walmart. On behalf of the petitioners, Mr. Wall. Good morning.
Good morning. Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, if I could reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. The language here is unambiguous. OPLA abrogates all common law product liability causes of action, including any public nuisance claim or cause of action at common law based on the distribution or sale of a product. That language could not be broader or more categorical. What's more, those two pieces of language were added by the General Assembly, first in 2005 and then in 2007, precisely to prevent plaintiffs from bringing common law public nuisance claims involving products outside of OPLA's exclusive scheme. That's exactly what the counties are attempting to do again here. The General Assembly made a considered legislative judgment, like many other states, not to let public nuisance law creep into products liability. And that judgment is entitled to respect. I'd like to start with the text, if I could. It appears at page 334 of the appendix, volume 2 of the appendix, 334. The relevant text at the bottom of the page says, OPLA is intended to abrogate, and I'm quoting the statute, all common law product liability claims or causes of action. When some doubt arose about whether that covered public nuisance claims, the General Assembly added the language that appears near the top of page 334 that says, product liability claim also includes any public nuisance claim or cause of action at common law in which various things involving a product are alleged, including supply, distribution, sale, and the rest. So in our view, that text is unambiguous. The General Assembly has left no doubt about the kinds of claims that OPLA covers. It covers public nuisance claims involving, among other things, the sale of a product.
And the remedy doesn't matter?
The remedy does not matter, Your Honor. That's exactly right.
Why?
Well, because of the cases to which the General Assembly was responding. Beretta, of course, was a case seeking both damages and injunctive relief. Same thing with Sherwin-Williams. In both of the amendments, what the General Assembly was saying was it didn't want public nuisance cases involving products without regard to the remedy sought. That's why the language of B there in the statute and the second definition in A13 say nothing about remedies. It says all common law product liability claims. And when that wasn't enough, it said any product liability claim at common law based on the allegations of the complaint didn't look to remedy at all. Because if you focused on remedy, the General Assembly wouldn't have been able to do anything about cases like Beretta and Sherwin-Williams, be a gaping hole in the statute, because all the plaintiffs would have to say is, we're seeking abatement rather than damages. And you could sue gun manufacturers for the public nuisance of violence, energy companies for climate change, fast food, lead paint, and all the rest. And that's not just my view. The counties embrace that at page 24 of their brief. They believe Beretta is a case that the General Assembly left standing. The district court says the same thing at page 211 of the appendix. The idea is, I think on the other side, that as long as you style your relief abatement instead of damages, all of these public nuisance claims are okay. And that's exactly what the General Assembly did not want to allow under Ohio law. So that's why none of the relevant statutory text turns in any way on the relief sought.
Wait a minute. Earlier in that statute, it says product liability claim means claim or cause of action to assert in a federal civil action, and that seeks to recover compensatory damages, right?
Yes.
Isn't that the remedy?
So, well, that's the nub of the dispute here, Your Honor, which is
So let's get into your argument that remedy doesn't matter. Well, remedy says and that seeks to recover compensatory damages. Sounds like remedy to me.
Well, so it does in the first definition, but the court's got to understand how the statute evolved, because that's very important. Originally, that first definition was all that was there. So if you had a product liability claim, it was supposed to be under OPLA, and it means various things, a defect claim against various kinds of defendants for, as you say, compensatory damages. And the General Assembly intended that to be exclusive. You brought that kind of a claim under OPLA or not at all. And then when plaintiffs tried to step outside that, they added B to abrogate all the common law claims. And then they added the second definition and says it also includes, it's additive. We're putting in a new category of things we want to abrogate. So you're absolutely right, Your Honor, that originally the idea was you bring a products liability claim under OPLA, that's for compensatory damages against certain defendants based on a defect, a failure to warn, or a warranty claim. All of the other language came because plaintiffs started saying, well, my claim doesn't satisfy those requirements, but I think I can bring it anyway. And the nub of the dispute between the two sides is, we see that second definition as additive, an attempt to abrogate an additional category of claims, which is why it says also includes.
So,
why not just add to the first definition, seeks to recover compensatory damages or injunctive relief or some equity language of some type? Wouldn't that just been easier?
So I think if the General Assembly, when it enacted OPLA in 1988, had foreseen what was going to happen, it would have put language in the statute saying this is meant to be exclusive and this definition is all you've got. That's what it intended. But of course, this court and Carroll said, well, if it doesn't specifically refer to it, we don't think it's abrogated. And that's why you get B, and then you get Sherwin-Williams, and then the Assembly comes back in 2007 and adds the second definition. So I agree with you that if they'd been writing from the outset with an eye toward a dispute about whether the statute would be exclusive for product liability claims in Ohio, they might have written the statute differently, but they intended it to be exclusive. That didn't happen in the courts. And then in response to Carroll, which was 5-2, Justice Cook dissented, joined by Chief Justice Moyer, and then Beretta, that was 4-3, Justice Cook dissented again. Then they came back and added the language in B and in the second definition. And what the other side says is, well, those limitations in that first definition, you have to read those down into the second definition. So when it says any public nuisance claim at common law, what it really means is any public nuisance claim at common law for compensatory damages based on a design defect. And our point is, that's not a natural reading of the text. None of that language appears in the amendments. It's not a natural reading of also includes, which is additive. And it would gut the 2005 and 2007 amendments, because it would mean that all of these cases could be brought as long as you just styled them as about abatement instead of damages.
Why not just say equity? Not just in the second definition. It also includes any public nuisance claim or cause of action at common law or in equity.
Well, so this is a cause. Equity just refers to the remedy.
Correct.
By the time they amended the statute, common law and equity had been collapsed. So I think to say a claim at common law is to pick up all of the common law claims without regard to remedy. And I think we need to have reasonable I think we should treat the General Assembly reasonably and fairly, which is to say they've amended the statute not once but twice. And they've been, the history here, as clear as I've ever seen in a statutory interpretation case, this court is issuing divided decisions. The General Assembly picks up on that, adds language to the statute. That doesn't work in the Sherwin-Williams case. Comes back and adds a second definition. And for what it's worth, Justice Fisher, I will just say, if you look at the legislative history of the 2007 amendment, here's what the General Assembly said. It said, we are clarifying our initial intent in enacting OPLA as initially expressed in the 2005 amendment, I'm quoting, to abrogate all common law product liability causes of action, including common law public nuisance causes of action. Here's the key part. Regardless of how the claim is described, styled, captioned, characterized, or designated, including claims against a manufacturer or supplier for a public nuisance allegedly caused by a manufacturer's or supplier's product. I don't know how the Assembly could have been clear.
But with the legislature, there's no claim that the product itself was defective. And so would it make sense for the legislature to try to knock out a public nuisance suit like this by putting it in the products liability statute? Because there's no claim that the product was defective. How do you reconcile that? How do we reconcile that?
So I guess I see that a little bit differently, Justice Bruner, which is to say the General Assembly wasn't trying just to pick up public nuisance claims involving defective products. Indeed, what it was worried about in some ways were the more far-flung applications of public nuisance involving non-defective products. So claims against gun manufacturers or energy companies or all the rest, or your Sherwin-Williams for the paint, lawful when sold. And the idea was...
But isn't that still based on effectiveness versus defectiveness?
I don't think so, Justice Stewart, because what the General Assembly was saying was, we don't want public nuisance encroaching on products liability law. And it doesn't matter whether the product is defective or non-defective. I mean, think about how odd that result would be. If the counties are right, what's abrogated are public nuisance claims where you claim the product was defective, and the only thing preserved are the less traditional applications of public nuisance, where you say it's a lawful, otherwise non-defective product, but we're still suing the gun manufacturers or what have you. And all of that in a state where the General Assembly has twice tried to abrogate these claims by statute, that strikes me as an incredibly odd result. It would preserve the most unusual, the least traditional applications of public nuisance. And that seems to me, in the face of cases like Beretta and Sherwin-Williams, exactly what we know the General Assembly did not want. That's why it says, regardless of how the claim is styled, and it says all common law product liability causes of action. It's not, and then in the new definition, it says based on the allegations of the complaint. It doesn't there, as it could have, insert any language about whether the product is defective or the remedy sought, because it didn't care. If you had a claim at common law involving a product, the idea was, no, we told you what you have in OPLA, and we want to funnel all of those common law claims into our statutory scheme.
But how is a putting this under the products, we're talking about a straight nuisance action, so putting this under the products liability statute, is this clear to citizens to even know where to find this?
So I think it is, Justice Bruno. I mean, I guess what I would say is the heart of their claim and what the jury found is that we oversupplied these dangerous products into the market. That looks like a product liability claim to me, but regardless of whether we agree on that, it looked like a products liability claim to the General Assembly. The General Assembly looked at Beretta and said, no, if you want to sue gun manufacturers, if you want to sue paint companies, you need to bring a defect, a warning, a warranty claim in products liability or not at all, because it was responding to cases like Beretta and Sherwin-Williams and saying, we're not going to let, if you want traditional public nuisance, we're not touching that. Keep in mind, nothing about OPLA changes at all. Your ability to sue the polluter, the stockyard, the garbage dump, but the General Assembly said when it comes to products, now you've crept into the products liability world. And there we gave you OPLA, and we intend that to be exclusive. And when plaintiffs kept trying to end run OPLA, they add language in B, and then again the second definition. And in our view, the court doesn't even need to reach all the history, because as I say, I don't think the text is genuinely ambiguous. And the mistake that the federal district court made was jumping right to the legislative history and not starting with the text that's at 126 of the appendix. But if you look at the history, I do think it is clear as a bell what the General Assembly was attempting to do. It did not care about whether your theory was that it was defective or not. It didn't care about whether you were seeking damages. That matters when you bring a claim under OPLA, but it didn't matter to the kinds of common law claims they were trying to get rid of. That was abrogating all common law product liability claims. That's what it says.
Is abatement what is traditionally contemplated by the legislature in common law nuisance claims?
It is, but I think this case shows how far we have ranged from the traditional abatement remedy, because the traditional abatement remedy is you stop the nuisance, right? Mm-hmm. Here it would have been you stop supplying the pills to the market. And the remedy in this case, where we're talking about not an order to stop something, not a true injunction, but write a $650 million check for a whole host of downstream programs and consequences over the course of 15 years, shows you, I think, what the General Assembly was worried about. They were worried that you could style these things as abatement, like in Beretta.
Was the harm at this case, can we even speculate that this was even on their minds, the harm contemplated in this particular case?
Well, I think what I would say is, you know, from cases like Beretta and Sherwin-Williams, where they were seeking both forms of relief, and the General Assembly responds to that and doesn't distinguish based on the form of relief, that's a pretty good indication that the General Assembly didn't care how you style the relief request in your complaint. If I could reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. On behalf of respondents, Mr. Frederick, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, David Frederick for Trumbull and Lake Counties. The district court issued an injunction to impose safer dispensing practices by the pharmacies and to require an abatement plan to lessen addiction in Trumbull and Lake Counties. The pharmacy's position is that those equitable remedies could not be ordered because in 2007 the Assembly amended OPLA to prohibit public nuisance claims seeking equitable remedies. That reading of OPLA errs for at least three reasons. The first is that to fall within OPLA, you need to have a defective product. The allegation here and the proof at trial was not that opioids are defective, it's that they're dangerous. The problem here was that the pharmacies failed to police in their dispensing practices the manner in which opioids would be overprescribed and subject to diversion. So you can dissolve and answer the Sixth Circuit question simply on the basis of no defect, not within OPLA.
Your opponents say that you waived that argument, that you only devoted one paragraph to saying that there's no liability for a non-defective product under the Act. Is that right? Did you waive that argument?
That's not correct. The district court, in its post-trial order, addressed the absence of a defect. I believe that's at page 207 of the appendix. And in our brief, I believe on page 81 in the Sixth Circuit, we did address the absence of a defect. There's no waiver here, Justice DeWine. And even if you thought that there might be, the Sixth Circuit's certification of the question would cure that because they're asking you whether under the statute how best to construe it in light of the claims brought. So I think the absence of a defect completely resolves the question. But I would say that the second point is the one that was raised by Justices Donnelly and Fisher, and that concerns the scope of the relief. OPLA has been addressed about compensatory damages for harm, meaning for personal injuries. Those are the claims that come within the product liability provisions that are set out in its operating provisions. These are the 0.71 to 0.80 provisions. The claims here all rest on the injunctive and equitable abatement remedies ordered by the district court to stop the improper dispensing practices and to create a fund that will lessen addiction. And that's why the county's amicus brief, joined by the Fraternal Order of Police here, shows you where those funds are going to go. They're going to go into ameliorating drug addiction, first responders, increased staffing, drug-saving, life-saving drugs that can be administered on the scenes of these kinds of crises. And those are the kinds of issues that counties like Trumbull and Lake Counties are having to deal with as the opioid crisis will continue for several more decades, because the nature of this addiction is such that once a significant portion of the population is addicted, it is very difficult to wean people off it.
So did you plead strict liability?
We did. There were a number of things that were pleaded that got winnowed down as the case went to trial and through trial, and those claims were not part of the final judgment entered by the district court. What was, I think, and what's before you now and what is on appeal is the propriety of the district court's injunction and its equitable abatement remedies.
But isn't strict liability traditionally associated with products liability?
Well, it can be, but, Your Honor, I think that what is important here are the findings by the district court, and I would again point to the post-trial order, where the court found the pharmacies knowingly dispensed more and they knowingly failed to implement safe dispensing practices in ways that increased the supply and the availability of diversion of these opioids into the illegal markets. And so as the case comes to you for decision on how best to construe the statute, I don't think you need to worry about strict liability.
Well, but, except I'm listening to what your colleague is saying, and So what was your bridge from nuisance and seeking equity to strict liability?
At the outset, the complaint alleged a number of different claims. The district judge winnowed the case down and said, we're only going to talk about the forward-looking, that if we only looked at backward-looking kinds of damages, there's no way that anyone could ever pay. The amount of devastation wrought by the particular players in the opioid crisis are so huge. And so the district judge made this case about the future and not about the past. And strict liability is classically a compensatory damages type concept over the adequacy of the product in its design, manufacturing, warning, et cetera. And that's why when you look at the abrogation provision, what is doing the abrogating are those provisions that operationalize the product liability claim. There are things like, are you seeking compensatory damages for personal injury? Are you trying to claim that the product was improperly designed? Are you claiming it was improperly manufactured and warned about and the like? And so it is not the case that the legislature would have thought so sweepingly, as Mr. Wall has argued today, that we're going to do away with all equitable remedies. It surely would have said so. And Justice DeWine, you invoked the elephants in mouse holes canon earlier this morning. That is exactly what the problem was here. They believe that it is impossible for counties that are hard hit by improper actions regarding dangerous products, not defective products, but dangerous ones, to be completely remedy-less in addressing the kinds of problems that are going to be flowing in the future.
So you're focused on the distribution.
No, we're focused on the dispensing practices, which they have said in other cases involve professional services that the pharmacies render under guidelines, because these are Control II substances that were under state and federal law require safe dispensing to ensure such thing.
I think we're just parsing the words. But
no, I don't think so. The distribution.
Does the strict liability, I mean, are you saying that you pled strict liability, but it's off the table now?
Yes.
Okay.
That claim's not in the case anymore.
But is there any way to attach strict liability to dispensing?
I don't think so, because what you're talking about here are failures to follow state and federal rules regarding how Control II substances get dispensed to patients. And so it's a professional services failure case. The pharmacies did not comply with their professional duties, and by doing so, allowed these very dangerous products to go out into the market where they could be diverted. I think the biggest problem is the next point that I want to make, which is that there's no indication in the legislative history that the General Assembly would have wanted to shift to taxpayers the costs and remedies regarding abatement caused by tortious wrongdoers that could be abated in equity. No indication whatsoever about that. And he can talk about guns or lead paint, which are the lead paint case was a case about defective. Representative Seitz, when he was discussing this bill on the floor of the Senate, we've quoted this passage in our brief, he's talking about the problem of defective products. He's not talking about the problem of how you deal with the statute in these other regards.
What about his example of guns? That's not a defective product.
Well, the way it was pleaded by the city of Cincinnati in the Beretta case, there was a defective claim concerning guns because of the way that their safety triggers and their absence of registration, so that there was an ability to have a secondary market that would harm children. So I would grant you that in most cases, you're not talking about a defect with respect to a gun. It was pleaded in that way. But I would note that the General Assembly actually didn't express any intent to overrule Beretta. And Beretta was a case about the economic damages being sought by the city of Cincinnati in regard to the costs associated with the nuisance created by the secondary market. It was not about compensatory damages for the personal injury, harms, and death that flowed. Those are off the table in our case. Our case is about the infrastructure costs needed to abate the remedy, and that's where the district court's order is basically being ignored by the other side here, because it is attempting to find mechanisms to lower the levels of addiction that have ravaged Trumbull and Lake counties. And that idea that somehow we're going to read the provision in a definition as doing this, cutting this wide swath into common law ancient remedies, the legal scholar's brief that we have brought to you is very clear about how old these remedies are for courts to order abatement and injunctive type relief. And it would be really odd in a situation where, you know, he's providing the business perspective, and I get that, but it would be odd to think that if they were going to amend a product liability statute, one of the first things they would do would be to get rid of punitive damages. And yet you can get punitive damages for a product liability claim under the Act, and he's saying silently they intended to do away with the kinds of abatement remedies that were ordered by the district court here. We get there grammatically because the word means has a different meaning than the words also includes. And we've given you statutes, and we submitted an additional authority earlier last week to give you another example. We used the one of economic loss in our brief, but the rental costs associated with renting facilities is another indication where the legislature used the phrase also includes to be clarifying in the scope of what was meant with the original definition.
So if we accept your reading of the statute and the also includes, what work does this provision, the second edition do? I mean, what does it cover? What does it abrogate?
It abrogates
in addition to what's already abrogated.
So I want to be clear that what abrogates means in this statute is to funnel and channel it into the operating provisions. It doesn't mean prohibit. There's no prohibition of any claim in OPLA at all. And the abrogator, if you will, Justice Sawant, if I could speak that way here, are the statutory provisions that give content
It abrogates everything that doesn't fit into this.
Yes.
Into the statute.
Those, I think that the intent was clear to funnel the lead paint case into the statute.
So what additional work does this do?
It makes clear that you can't ignore the pleading requirements of OPLA if you're styling your case public nuisance when, in fact, it is about a defective product seeking compensatory damages. Many at common law, there were common law claims and remedies that dealt with compensatory damages as well as equitable relief.
So give me some examples of claims that would not have been abrogated without this language, but because of the addition of it, are abrogated.
I think that the lead paint case is probably the best example. And I would say to you, Justice DeWine, that we're in such an unusual territory. My team and I have thought and spent many hours trying to come up with creative hypotheticals, but opioids is just such a unique sui generis problem that if you are concerned about the scope, I think that the best way to do that is to resolve this issue before you by saying we're not going to try to answer hypothetical questions because the problem that was identified by the district court here and remedied was the dispensing practices and the concerns about the pharmacy's failure to comply with their state and federal requirements. And so, Justice Wine, that's why I think that, you know, if you look at what Representative Seitz was getting at on the floor.
I'm not sure I'm really all that interested in what one legislature out of 132 said. I mean, that doesn't seem particularly relevant to our decision. I mean, I'm sure there are lots of people who vote on this who had lots of opinions and probably thought did different things.
Fair enough. But when the legislative history is pointing to one particular case study, I think you can reasonably infer that the intent of more than just one was to address that particular issue. But I do think that there is, you know, I would agree that there are some instincts to dress up product liability claims for defective products in public nuisance language in certain circumstances. Then the lead paint case was an example where the allegation was that a bunch of individual homes strung together who each had their own individual harm created a public problem. And I think it's reasonable to infer that the assembly was trying to get at that particular issue. But I would point out that it would be really odd to take a definitional amendment in which the additional phrase also includes, is meant to clarify the sweep of the preceding definition, and gut an entire line of common law claims. What this court has always done with respect to these kinds of questions, and we point this out on pages 12 and 18 of our brief, is adopt the canon that we're not going to think of the legislature as getting rid of remedies unless they're very clear in saying so, and we're going to construe statutes that abrogate common law remedies very narrowly.
But counsel, I mean, I'm reading from the statute, product liability claim also includes any public nuisance claim or cause of action at common law.
Yes.
To agree with you, don't I have to eliminate that?
No, because what it does is it reincorporates the defined term, a product liability claim. The product liability claim is defined in the first sentence of the definition, yeah, and then in the also includes section. And so when you use a defined term, we're all taught as lawyers, pull in the definition from the defined term and put it in here. And so what they're saying here in the second one is that if you want to try to assert a public nuisance claim, that as a product liability claim, we're bringing in the compensatory damages for harm, the issues about personal injury, and a defective product.
But it uses the word any. That's the reason I asked the question.
Yeah. No, and I think that the word any has to be viewed in the context of where the also includes is clarifying the meaning of the first phrase. And so if you simply view that as any effort to try to dress up a public nuisance claim that's really a product liability claim in disguise, it's got to be funneled into the pleading and proof requirements of 0.71 to 0.80. There wasn't any, they could have, as you said, asked my colleague, they could have written this statute much more easily to accomplish the objective that the pharmacies are seeking here. They didn't do that. And when you put it in a definition rather than in the abrogation provision, it's even, I think, doubly uncertain why the legislature would have sought to do that. Unless the court has further questions, we'll submit.
Thank you. Mr. Wall, you have 1 minute remaining.
So three quick points, Your Honors, in response to the questions. Justices Fisher and DeWine, on the county's view, the 2007 amendment did not do any additional work. If they had wanted public nuisance to be subject to the limits, they would have stuck it in the first definition. They broke it out as a freestanding category and said, also includes. That wasn't hiding an elephant in a mouse hole. It doesn't gut some long line of common law cases. It cuts off non-traditional uses of public nuisance that were then starting to grow, and the General Assembly wanted to nip it in the bud, and they didn't hide it in a mouse hole. They did it twice, out on the open, in clear statutory language. Defective products, Justice DeWine, not within the certified question, but they have the same merits problem, just like the compensatory damages limitation doesn't travel down to the second definition. Neither does anything about the defect. And then the last point is the counties say they were left remedy-less, but that's not true. There has been a global settlement. They chose not to participate, to focus on their public nuisance claim. They did that in the face of OPLA. They've gambled they can recover more through this litigation, and unfortunately, they run into clear statutory text.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.